I'm not looking at that, it says John Gordon.
Yeah.
We're looking on that Zion Omer Aleph. And if you count up from the end of Perek Aleph, that should be about 8 lines up. And you remember that the Mishnah had recorded a machlokes as to what Bezdin that executes an accused criminal on a frequent basis is categorized as a chovlanit. And we had 2 opinions. According to one opinion, it's a Bezdin that puts someone to death once in 7 years. According to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, it's one in 70 years. The Gemara has a question here about Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria. Iboilahu, achas l'shivim shana nikreis avlanit. Is Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria basically an extension of what we saw right before it in the Mishnah? That means, just like the Mishnah says in the name of the Tanakhama, that a basin that puts someone to death once in 7 years is called a chavlanit. So too, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, even if it goes once in 70 years, that itself qualifies the Beis Din as a chablonit. O Dilmar, is it perhaps Urach Arahi? In other words, maybe what Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is simply saying here is that it's normal to put someone to death once in 70 years. If it's more frequent than once in 70 years, then it's called a chovlanit. So again, the Gemara leaves this as an open-ended question, teku, let it stand, which means we don't know if Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaria, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is telling us that once in 70 years is considered a chovlanit, or once in 70 years is orach arah. That's something that's normal, that's something that can be acceptable, and it's only if it's more frequent than once in 70 years, then it becomes classified as a chovlanit.
The reality is, there are many but the Dinim in Eretz Yisrael that have the power to give out the death penalty. And so maybe hundreds of them, in fact, in the country. So really we're saying that they, in a normal way, either once in 70 or once in 7, lots of people can get killed.
Right, so the question is, at what point do we think that Beis Din is overly implementing or exercising their rights to put someone to death? Obviously, as we discussed last week in great length, there has to be an interrogation of the Edom, and we're going to see it here again in the next sugya. And it has to be a very thorough investigation. We have to be absolutely convinced that these witnesses are telling the truth. They were subject to Hazama, but nobody came along to imazin them. And once we've gone through the entire process, and we've done an absolutely thorough job, we're totally convinced that this murderer is guilty as accused, and he was condemned to death, then we can put him to death. But we should be very meticulous about that, and therefore it's not such an easy thing from a halachic point of view to put someone to death.
Correct, as Sam was saying, it's not strange to see one in 70 years, whereas it means numbers that have gone so far.
Again, according to Rabbi Akiva, as we'll soon see, it's almost impossible to put someone to death.
I know.
So let's take a look at this Gemara. So Rabbi Atarfin and Rabbi Akiva say, Ilu Hayinu, if we were B'Sanhedrin, members of the Sanhedrin, Lo Nerag Adam Me'olam. What does that mean? So let's see how the Gemara develops. This Hechi Havi Avdi. What was the method that Rabbi Atarfin and Rabbi Akiva applied in order to arrive at this conclusion that no one would be killed, no one would be put to death? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, the Amri Chavayu, both came up with the same explanation, that the interrogation against witnesses who are testifying about, let's say, Reuven killing Shimon, is so intense, the questions are so difficult to answer, that the Eidim would not possibly be able to stand up to those questions, those investigations. What is the question? Re'isem trefa harag, or Sholem Hara. What that basically means is that a person who has some sort of internal injury, such that he's going to die from that injury, and it might not be obvious on the outside externally, such a person is called a treifa. And the law is that a horiges ha-treifa is potter. We cannot put someone to death if the murderer killed a treifa. We're not saying that he was justified in killing a treifa, but as far as the implementing the execution, that we can't do because the nirtzach, the nerag, was a treifa. So now we're going to ask the Eidim, are you absolutely certain that the person who is the victim of this crime, of this murder, was sholem? He was healthy, all his internal organs were okay, or the vital organs, I should say. Or perhaps, is there a possibility that he was a treifa? Now, what are the chances that the Eidim would know the answer to that question?
Zero.
It's almost nil, correct. I mean, can they do such an investigation of his internal organs? You know, they did what's that thing called, the X-rays? No. I'm talking before
MRI.
He was killed.
An
MRI. I was talking.
CAT scan.
I was thinking of that other one. The ultrasound. Did they do an ultrasound? Amar Rav Ashi adds a little bit of fuel to the flame here. He says, Imtim Salomar, and even if the Eidim could somehow say that, you know, they did this investigation, they checked out his internal organs before he was victimized, before he was murdered, and he was an absolute sholem. Even if somehow or other they could tell you that. But Dilma, there's still another question that they can't answer, and that is B'makom Sayif Nekev Hava. Exactly where the murder weapon penetrated into the body of the victim, that's where there was a treifa, there was a nekev. There was a bad gash over there that would have caused the victim to die in any event. And Rashi and all the Mefarshim explain, what is Rav Ashi coming to add over here? Take a look at Rashi. Imtim Salomar Sholem Harak, Sheyomru, if they can somehow claim, Badaknuhu, we checked him, Li'achar Misoso, Bikol Shmones Treifos. What Rav Ashi is suggesting is the following. Maybe there is no positive answer on the part of the Eidim that before the murder was done, his organs were all intact. That they can't say. But what they could say is that we did an autopsy and we found out that all his organs were okay. So post-mortem we could decide that he wasn't a treifa. Says Rav Ashi, even that wouldn't suffice. Even that would not give the Eidim the status of Eidim. Why? Because there's some possibility that he was a treifa, and even the post-mortem autopsy would not be able to clarify that. How so? Because B'makom Sayif Nekev Havi. B'makom Nekev Sayif Havi. How's it go? B'makom Sayif Nekev Havi. I got it right the first time. So that's the way Rashi learns this suit. Now, Tosfos, Dibra Maskel Dilma, this long Tosfos here on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, asks the following question. He says the following. Why did Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon raise this possibility that seems so far out that there was a nekev b'makom sayif? The Gemara establishes in Chulin that we're not afraid of such a possibility. We're not choshesh. We don't suspect that possibility. The Gemara establishes in Chulin that holchim achar rov b'nei adam. And most people would not have this gash, you know, this internal injury and become a treifa from it. So we assume that anyone walking on 2 feet is basically healthy, and at least it's not a treifa. Treifa is someone who's gonna die within 12 months. So that's Tosfos' problem. So Tosfos gives an answer here in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. Kosh Rabbeinu Tam, Damrinon. We don't have such a consideration. The Azlin and Basar Ruba. We rely on Rome. The Omer of Tam, Devadai Lo Chai Shinon. We don't have a halachic premise or principle that would tell us let's worry about the fact that maybe this victim was a treifa at the time of his death. Ella, but Hayeshoelahem Sheim Amru Delo Yadinan Yevatel Ha'edus. And here Rabbeinu Tam presents the following thesis. There are certain questions that really we don't have to ask at all. But once we ask them, we absolutely must get answers. And if they can't answer those questions, then the Eidus is completely disqualified. Meaning that according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's a certain set standard number of questions that the Eidus absolutely have to answer in all cases. Those are objective, those called the seven Chakiros. Beyond that, Beis Din is given the license, the authority to add questions. Once they add questions, those questions now become upgraded to the status of Chakiris. And once they become part of the Chakiris, the interrogation of the Eidim, the Eidim must give answers to that question. And he gives examples from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that even though you don't have to exactly know what the nature of the weapon, the murder weapon was, but once we ask them, they have to tell us. So this is the premise of Rabbeinu Tam, that the Beis Din has the right to exercise the authority of introducing questions, which now become part of the Chakiros Ha'edim. Tosis is not excited about Rabbeinu Tam. If we have time, we'll go through the entire Tosis, but he suggests another possible approach to understand the methodology of Rabbi Tam for Rabbi Akiva. He suggests that maybe what they were doing was they were asking a bomb of questions, a whole slew of questions. And what they wanted to do was to get to the point in which there'll be a chashasai, in which the two witnesses, if there are only two, would contradict each other. Because when you get down to the very specifics, then the likelihood that there'll be some contradiction, some differential, you know, some, what word am I looking for? Some discrepancy, that's the word I'm looking for, thank you. So there'll be some discrepancy between the Eidim is increased manifold. So that makes a lot more sense than Rabbeinu Tam. It's a little bit more difficult to put into the language of the Gemara, because the Gemara says quite explicitly that we ask them, we interrogate them, was he a treifa, was he a shalem? And in fact, according to Tosfos, against Rabbeinu Tam, they don't even have to answer that question. They can just plead the fifth, say, I don't know. But what is the methodology, and I don't know how to push it into the language of the Gemara according to Tosis, is that we will ask so many questions until finally, because the Eidim stand, you know, they come forward and answer those questions, there'll be some discrepancy between the witnesses. Now, there is another possible road that we can take here in this sugya, and that's the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that Chayshinon lebi'uta. Meaning, even though the Torah says Azlina Basaruba, Achriyam Lahatis, we rely on Rov, but says Rabbi Meir, we also have to consider the Mi'ut. The Mi'ut is not non-existent. It's not a null factor that should be completely null and voided. No. Rabbi Meir says we always have to be Choshesh for Mi'ut. For example, we don't know if this child was born after a full, you know, she carried fully for 9 months. Was he born after, he or she was born after 7 months? So even though the Chachamim will say, well, we'll go bus a Rove, and Rove women take the carry the full term, but Rabbi Meir is going to be choshes that maybe she gave birth after 7 months. And that's no geya to Yuchsin and who the child, who's the father of the child, and so forth and so on. So perhaps we could suggest, I'm just throwing out an idea here, that Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva were of the opinion that Chayshinu Lemiyuta like Rabbi Meir. So all the Rishonim Pei Echad say that in the case of Treifa, to say this about someone that we don't know is a Treifa, but maybe he is a Treifa, and that we have to take that into consideration. And therefore, if the Eidim can't clarify 100% beyond the shadow of a doubt that this person who was killed was a Sholem and not a Treifa, we have to be Mchoshesh based on Rabbi Meir that maybe the victim was a Treifa, and if we can't put the murderer to death. All the Rishonim say that's not true. Rabbi Meir's Chayshino Lemi'uta only applies in specific situations where the Torah would allow us to be worried about the mute. Meaning, there's no absolute contradiction to the Torah law. Rabbi Meir is not in any position to contradict the Torah law. The Torah law says that if Reuven murders Shimon, Reuven will be put to death. And the death penalty is written in the Torah, it's recorded there. If you're going to tell me that based on Rabbi Meir's Chayshin al-Miyuta, we don't know if the victim was Sholem or he was a Trefa, then basically you've undermined the entire law of the Torah that we put the murderer to death. And therefore, in this case, even Rabbi Meir would have to agree that lo chayshin al miyuta, that the Torah falls back on Reuven. The same thing, by the way, applies in the case of Makel Aviv or Mekalel Aviv, where the Torah says you have to put such a person to death. And how do you know it's his father? Elo, what the Gemara establishes, Rov Be'ilo Zachar Ba. Rabbi Meir in this case cannot say chayshin al miyuta. We can't put him to death. Why? Because maybe he's not the father. This before DNA testing. So that Rabbi Meir can't contradict a pasuk in Chumash, and therefore we have to conclude that in these cases the Torah says we rely on Rov and there's no Chayshinon Lemiyut. The Ramban has a different take on this sugya. The Ramban says that when we ask the Eidim Ra'isem Trefa Harag, the Ramban says we don't mean to ask them, did they check the inner organs of the body of the victim? We don't have to be choshesh that maybe there was some injury, internal injury, and therefore the victim was a traitor. The question itself could not possibly be asked. But rather, says the Ramban, the question is, ha'im badaktim oso mitrefos chitzonios, hanikaros leroa mibachutz. There are some causes of trefa that can be what?
It's a simon.
Correct, that you can see it on the outside of the body. That's something that we would logically require of the Eidim to check out. And says the Ramban, me'achar she'ein dercha Eidim lizbonin bozeh, since the Eidim don't generally check that out, you know, they don't look up and down the body to make a check and see maybe he's a trefa because of some external phenomenon. Therefore, it's not matzui that we would put the nidon to death. What Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon are insisting is that it's very rare that we can put the accused to death. Not that they're excluding it absolutely. When they say lo hayinerag adam e'olam, which is the literal language of the Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, that's not to be taken literally. It means that it would be very rare. So then Rav Ashi makes a lot of sense. Rav Ashi says, what if the Eidim say, and it's possible, badaknu es hanerag, but again, not a post-mortem in the sense of, you know, we cut the body open, no, but we checked out his body after his death. So Rav Ashi is coming to answer the following question. Okay, it's rare that we'll be able to rely on the Eidim that they checked out the nerag before he was killed. But why is it so rare that they would have checked him? You know, give a cook, as we say, you know, look at his body after you died and see whether he's a healthy guy. Oh. And keep in mind that according to the Ramban's thesis, you don't have to know what the status of the internal organs is. Oh, mikomokom yesh lochus shema b'makom sayif haya nekev chitzoni. Maybe there was an external injury that could have been visible before the crime, before the murder was committed. And in that case, we have to be choshesh that maybe the person is a trefa because of that external injury that's outside of his body. But now it's impossible to check that out. Because once the murder was done, maybe that external injury was exactly in the place where the knife went in, where the sayif, the sword, penetrated into the body of the victim. So just to summarize, we have here Tosis's approach to the sugya, we have here the Ramban's approach to the sugya. Tosis's approach to the sugya is that either, the way Rabbi Yitam would have it, that we can actually interrogate the Eidim and ask them if they know for sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that the victim was a Sholem and not a Trefa. Tosis rejects that shot of Rabbi Yitam because he thinks that the Eidim are not required to know the answer to that question. The Torah is not worried about the possibility that the victim is a treifa. Tosfos therefore suggests his pshat, alternative to Rabbi Natan, that we're going to investigate and interrogate the Eidim until finally we get a hakhosha, some sort of detail where they contradict each other. And then we have the Ramban Shita, that what we're going to press upon the Eidim is that they should know whether or not there was some external organ that was damaged in such a way that it makes them a treifa. And even if the Eidim would claim that posthumously we did an inspection of the body of the victim and we determined that there was no obvious treifa mark there, nevertheless, says Rav Ashi, we still could knock down the Eidim. Maybe there was an external injury, they didn't notice it, and now it's impossible to make that determination because Memokom Saif Nekefa. Fine. Now, wait a minute. We've solved the problem in terms of murder, that we're going to somehow disqualify the Eidim who are testifying in a murder case. But the Gemara is not satisfied with that, because there are other possible cases of capital punishment. For example, Boel Es Ha'erva. What question, what interrogation will we subject the Eidim to in order to undermine their Eidus in the case of Be'ilas Erva? So that's the Gemara's next question. Beboel es ha'erva hechi havi avide. What did Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon do? What was their methodology in order to undermine Eidus on Be'ilas Erva? I mean, two Eidim come in, they say, we saw Reuven having Be'ilah with Leah, and she's an Eishes Ish, and we gave him Asra and the whole bit, so we're going to put him to death. What's Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva going to say in this case? Abai v'rova, the Amri Chavayu, they understood the method of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, and they're going to ask the Eidim, Re'isem kimchol bishvofores, did you actually see the penetration, the Maisavir? The Gemara doesn't want to say it, you know, because it's Tznius reason. So the Gemara gives a mashal. Kimchol bishvofores. You know, you have a painter, you know, he has the dye or the paint in a little cup, a receptacle. And then he has this, what should we call it?
A brush, right?
He has some sort of a brush and he puts it into the paint, you know. So that's the mashal the Gemara gives. But in any event, the Gemara is saying that we're going to trip up the Eidim because they don't have an answer to this question that they actually saw kimchol bishvofores. At the end of the day, they saw them together, but they didn't see, you know, didn't go underneath the whole thing, and you know, with a magnifying glass or whatever, with binoculars. So we're not going to be able to put this person to death or she to death.
You don't need Hara.
Well, even Hara they couldn't see. That's the Gemara's assumption. And now the Gemara is going to ask, according to the Rabbanan of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, how do we put someone to death if the Eidim can't see that? And that's going to be the next Shaka V'Tarya to finish up the first Perek in Makos. But before we get to that, I want to point out Tosus here, Kim Chol Bishvofores. Tosus doesn't understand, why is the Gemara bothered by Boel Es Ha'erva? You know, we've covered the case of Ritzicha. Now we're up to Boel Es Ha'erva. Are there no other cases of capital crimes? So Tosus says, Tema, Oved Avodah Zarah U'Mechal Shabbos Ma'ikol Meimar. I mean, the man was Michal Shabbos. He worshipped an idol. How are you going to trip up the Eidim in such a case? And keep in mind that the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Kibar Tarfon, Lo hayu adam nerag biola. So there are two answers to this question. The first answer is more of a technical one. And Tosus says that lo nerag adam eolam in the Mishnah means in most cases, similar to what we saw before the Ramban. Most cases of the capital nature are either A, Ritzicha, or B, Boel Es Ha'erva. And even if there may be cases of Avodah Zarah and Mechal Shabbos, however, they weren't frequent enough, and therefore, as a general rule, we don't have that frequency of cases of capital nature except in Rotzeach and Arayis. Look, what can I say, Rabbi Osai? I don't know. You'd have to check this out, you know, for every society, at least in the society of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarf. It's a very technical, logistical answer. But I like the second answer better. The Odeh Shlomer, says Tosus, Ika lemeimar, you know what we could ask them? And this was Pasha to the Gemara. The Gemara even didn't even have to mention this. Re'isem shehamechalel eino treifa. This is all included in the parsha of Rotzeach. How do we solve the parsha of Rotzeach? We're not going to put the Rotzeach to death. Because we asked him, is the victim was a treifa? Was he not a treifa? So too, here we're not talking about the victim, we're talking about the accused. And we're going to ask if the accused was a treifa. Now we have to figure out what difference it made. I mean, even if the mechalel was a treifa, so what's so terrible? We'll put him to death anyway. Says Tosfos, the imhu treifa im kain im tizimem lo yu chayovim mis. In other words, what Tosfos is invoking is the principle of eidah shiyati achlazima. Why? Because two eidim and kamen mazim these eidim. And then we're going to find out, or at least the possibility exists, that the nidon who's being accused of chol shabbos of avodah zarah was a treifa. So the hazama now, the zmana, I would say, was to kill a treifa. And in such a case, you can only accuse the eidim of being hargim es hatreifa, right? They zomu larog es hatreifa, and that's no worse than someone who actually kills a treifa. Someone who kills a treifa is potter. And therefore, gavra ketila be'ina lemikdal. We wanted the Aiden could claim, again, it doesn't matter if the Aiden put forward this claim, we'll put it forward on their behalf, that we came to kill a Mechalel or an Oved who was a gavra ketila. And you remember the sugi that we had back after the hay about gavra ketila katil, that there's no hazama, and therefore, havile edus she'i ata yochol lehazima. I just want to make one comment here. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud. Does this Tosfos stim with the Ramban? The Ramban we just finished saying, we don't have to worry about a treifa, at least as not as far as internal organs. The Torah is not choshish for a treifa. We have many parshas in the Torah where we put someone to death and the Torah commands us to do so, and we're not choshish for a treifa. Ella, what says the Ramban? In the case of Rotzeach, we have a possibility that there was an external injury, which the Eidim couldn't see, and therefore the Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon had a great answer to the question why we're not going to put to death this accused Rotzeach. But in the case of Mechalel, or in the case of an Oved Avodah Zarah, the accused is well, is fine and well, he's walking on 2 feet. We can determine whether he's a treifa or not. Why the second answer Tosfos doesn't stim with the Ramban? The Ramban says Tosfos says we're going to ask the Eidim, Re'isem Shamachalel Eino Treifa. Can you guarantee us that the Machalel who violated Shabbos is not a treifa? The answer is yes. By golly, I can guarantee that. Let's just look him over. There's no sayif going into his body. So if there's no external organ, and the Ramban Shita is, then we're not koshish for internal organs. Meaning, all I'm just pointing out is that this second answer, Tosfos, is really Tosfos l'shitasa, as he claims in the name of Rabbeinu Tam and the Tosfos Dilma, that we are choshesh for a treifa. Then maybe, perhaps, it was a treifa. Even if it means his internal organs were damaged. And therefore, in the case of Mechalas HaShabbos, again, you'll ask me why we can't do a CAT scan, right? That's a good question. But in any event, let's assume we cannot absolutely determine beyond a shadow of doubt that this Mechalel is a treifa. That's what Tosfos says. We don't know. And therefore, we can't put the
Eidim. You're looking for a loophole here. The whole point is to find a way so that the Eidim are not going to be defined as having given proper Eidut. So it doesn't matter what the facts are. It matters what was the witnesses' perceptions at the time, and does the basis of their testimony qualify them as being proper Eidim to allow the Eidim to be killed. They didn't check for a siman of
treifas.
It doesn't matter. They didn't check. So there was a doubt what they saw.
You mean that itself would alleviate them of hazoma? Is that what you mean? That's a big finish. You might be right. But if you're not saying that, again, let me reiterate reiterate my position. You can't put these Eidim to death because maybe they were testifying against the treifa. If the treifa is dead, or the Safi treifa is dead, I agree with you. We can't clarify whether he's a treifa. But if he's alive and well, why can't you clarify if he's a treifa or not? See, you're interrogating the Edom and you're saying to them, do you know for sure that he was a traitor? And the answer is, well, let's check him out.
Okay, but that's two separate issues. On the Hazama side, you're right, but I'm not talking about... Nobody's there to accuse them of being Edom Zomim. They're simply giving testimony. They're now in the Beit Din.
Yeah, right. So why do we disqualify their Edoms? Because they can't tell us if he's
because they didn't check. So they.
So what? What is it? Moral responsibility that they have to check?
Rabbi Kiva and I were talking, we're going to ask this question, and if you can't give me an answer, yes, I looked, and I saw that there was no trefa, there was no siman of trefa.
Right, but so what, Aaron? I'll give you an answer right now. Right? What wasn't that Rav Ashi's point? Rav Ashi said that, well, let's check him out now. Rav Ashi was talking about a post-mortem and an autopsy. And the answer was, Dilma Bamakum Saif Nekavati. But in the case of someone who's alive and well, we can check him out now. According to the Ramban, all we have to do is check him out externally. I mean, that would be 5 minutes of our efforts. Perhaps, Alan, maybe you're right about Hazom. Go ahead, Jonathan, what do you want to say?
I thought that the Tosos fits better with the second answer of Tosos, that well, the questions are just examples of questions that will ask the tricky questions that will ask the Edom.
To trip them up.
Trip them up. Yeah. Right. So one says, was the murderer trefa? One says, he looked healthy to me, and the other one says, I don't know. That's a contradiction.
Well, I don't know if you could fit that into Tosfos here at this point. It says, Odin Shlomar, the Ikalameno, Re'isem, Shemechalel, Eino trefa. Right? And basically, Tosfos goes on to say that we have to raise the possibility that maybe the Machal is a trefa. And therefore, it's Eidishi Yatiyachalazim.
No, that just means that's a valid question.
I don't know.
In other words, if they just asked, like, what shirt was he wearing?
But one second, Jonathan. I think we're both saying the same thing, just in different ways. No, I think you have to agree with me that if you're asking the Edom to clarify beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Machal was a trefa, they could do that. You're on board with me on that. And therefore the Ramban now becomes very instrumental because the Ramban says that the Torah is not worried about internal injuries. It's not even on the radar screen. That doesn't come into consideration. And therefore if you want to know whether the Edom could clarify... Now, Jonathan, you're right. According to the other day in Tosfos, forget about Rebbe Tam for a moment. If you go with the Tosfos that says we're going to pile on question after question, so finally we catch them on a contradiction. We're going to finally get them on a discrepancy in Akhosh, and then you're right. Maybe we're trying to just trip them up until one guy says this and one guy says that. But certainly, if we're going to take the approach that literally we have to determine whether or not the Machalel was a trefa, I don't see why you can't determine that if you accept the premise of the Ramban. That was just my I think I'm correct about that.
Another question.
Just one second, Al. Before I lose my trend, I had something to tell you. Then you're back in the thing. Fine. So let's again review, because I want to present to you a question in Tosfos Shas. Just to review, to recap. The reason why, says Tosfos, the Gemara only raised an issue as far as Boel Es HaErva is concerned, is because as far as Mechalel Shabbos is concerned, or as far as Ovid Avodah Zarah is concerned, it was simple to the Gemara that we could trip up the Edom in the same way that we would trip up the Edom if they were testifying in a murder case. Namely, we'll ask them, interrogate them about Trefa. Now, I don't understand one thing, Omi. If Tosfos is correct, Why does the Gemara ask the question about Boel Es HaErva? I mean, the same scenario. Was the Boel a Shalem or a Trefa? Was the Nevelis a Shlemo or a Trefa? Again, it's going to be the same thing of Eidishi Yatiyachalazim. Again, Tosfos is basically trying to understand the flow of the Gemara. The Gemara has already answered the question of how we're going to trip up the Eidei Ritzicha. Now the Gemara is going on and asking how we're going to trip up the Eidei Be'ilah. And the Gemara comes up with a whole to-do that they didn't see Kimchol v'Shofar. Who needs that? Cut that all out. All you need to say is, was the Boel a trefa? Was he not a trefa? And basically, I think what I'm asking is the following, that there's no such thing as Edus anymore. I think you've basically thrown out all of Edus. Because, well, at least, I shouldn't say that. You've thrown out any Edus in any capital crime. Because it's always going to be Eidishi Yatiyachal Azim, because it's always going to be a situation where perhaps the Nidon who's being accused is a treif. So why did Gemara focus on Bolas Erva? I don't get it. That's one question I have. The Tosas Shatz has a different question. Let me present to you his question. He wants to know that what about the Horig himself? In other words, the Gemara is totally focused on the situation of the victim, the person who's murdered. Maybe he was a treifa, maybe he wasn't. And therefore we're going to throw out the Edim, because they cannot clarify whether whether the Nerag, the victim, was a treifa or a sholem. So Tosfos says, wait a minute, why were we choshish that the Horig was a treifa? I'll read to you his language. He says, Rav Ashi has to tell us, Intim Saloma Sholim Avidilma Mokum Saif Nekev Havi. Hoyalo Lomar, the Af Iman Nerag Sholim Hoya. This is where Rav Ashi should have pointed out. Even if I grant you that the Nerag was a Sholim, correct? Mikomokom Yesh Lochu Shema Hahorig, who treifa. And therefore, if the horeg, the murderer, is a treifa, again it becomes edus she'iyata yochel azima. So again, Rabosa, I'm just reiterating two questions that I'm throwing out here. Nizkom b'piachaburu. Question number one is, if Tosis is right, that we always have to clarify with these edim, was the nidon a treifa or not? Otherwise, it's Eidus Shiyat Yochel Azima. What was the Gemara bothered by in the case of Bolas Erva? And question number two, when Rav Ashi wanted to say, well, even if the Eidim will testify that the Nerag, the victim, was a Sholem, but we still have another problem, because maybe Mokum Saif Nekavah. Forget about that. Maybe the Horeg, against whom they're testifying, maybe he was a Treifa. And then again, it becomes Eidus Shiyat Yochel Azima. This Eidus Shiyat Yochel Azima is a very beautiful chah on the part of Tosis. But it doesn't seem to reflect itself in the Shaklavitaria of the Gemara. Finally, the Gemara says the fact, Rabbanan Hechi Dainu. So now that you've asked me this amazing question, you know, that the Edom can't possibly come up with an answer, they did not see Kim Chol B'Shvofaris. So how are we going to put any Boel to death? I mean, after all, the Chachom say that we do put people to death. So the Gemara answers, Kishmuel. We're going to have to invoke the principle of Shmuel. Shmuel radically changes the nature of Eidus with regard to Be'ilas Erva. And he says, Bimenafim, Mishi Yeru, Kimenafim. The Eidim don't have to see Kimchol B'Shvafaris. All they have to do is see him Kederach HaMenafim. Rashi says, Mishi Yinagu Inyan Niuf, Sheshochim b'kiruv basar v'nagim kiderech tashish. I think what's going on is the following. In every single case, with regard to every violation in which there's a criminal act and the criminal can be taken to trial and condemned, and the Torah has many, we have to define the nature, the scope, and define precisely what is the edus that's required. What do the edim have to see? And it's not always going to be the same answer. Because if the answer is going to be, for example, the case of Bolas Erva, Kim Chol B'Shvofaris, then we'll never be able to put a Bolas Erva to death. So what does the Torah mean when the Torah says, Yomusu Kam Shnayan, that we'll put both of them to death, the Bol and the Velas? It must be that in this case we have to shift and redefine the nature of the Eidus. What do the Edom have to see? And it's fascinating, because you and I would have said the following. Okay, Kederach HaMenoach, Rashi says, Shofin, the Kiruv Basar. Right? Okay, I admit it's very suspicious, but it's not definite. You didn't really see the Maisa. And I think what's going on here is that what the Torah is doing is, with its flexibility, it's expanding the nature of the Maisa, and saying that if they saw X, then we know that Y took place. If they saw Kedemer Chaminoaf and Shofim Zohar Gavizeh, we know that there's Kimchol B'Shvofaris, and that they don't have to see. That's a pretty revolutionary feeling.
Unless you're in front of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Dorfman, in which case you would have to see it.
Correct. But I'm just trying to understand the Chachamim Shita. It's really something. You know, you would have asked me, what is Eidus? What constitutes Eidus? And the answer is, they have to see everything that is in violation of the crime. No, the Gemara is saying they don't have to see the exact violation of the crime. They have to see what we call circumstantial evidence. But again, don't use that terminology. But yeah, it's got to be more than circumstantial evidence. Yeah, it's got to be compelling evidence. But I'm just saying, compelling evidence.
Rashi's lashon is when the argument came down. Tashmish, this is something that's the derech hatevel. This that level of eidus means that they were intimate with one another.
I understand there was intimacy, but I don't know exactly whether or not they violated the Maisa for which the Chayiv Misa. You know, just to joke with you, I would say the following. Supposing Reuven and Leah wanted to fake out to Eidus, you know, and they decided to play a game, you know. Let's say Reuven wanted to marry Leah at the time when there was Kedusha Bia involved. You know, now we don't have to marry because the princess Rav already was minded to divide the question. But let's say we had Kedusha Bia and you need Eidus to see the Bia in order to establish that she's an Eidus. And he and she decide we're going to play a game. We're going to go through all the motions, you know, Kederach HaMnoafim, but there's no Kimchol B'Shvofaris. I mean, theoretically, you can do something.
Rashi's not saying that there's no Kimchol B'Shvofaris. They don't see the Kimchol.
No, I'm not saying, Chas V'Shalom, saying we're not going to put them to death if there was no Kimchol B'Shvofaris. All I meant to say, I was trying to use like a pedagogical tool to show you that Kederach HaMnoafim is not equal to Kimchol B'Shvofaris in terms of what you see. Obviously, there was Kimchol B'Shvofaris, but I'm just saying that you're really flexible here about the nature of the
We have a precedent from the Torah that the Hilchos Yichud, if it's Eidim that there was Yichud, it creates the assumption.
Hey, Yichud, the beer.
Yeah, which is far beyond normal Eidim. So they've already got precedent in
right, no, but I have a feeling that sugya of Hey, Yichud, is based on this sugya. This is really the source of it. Had Chazal know that Eide Yichud or Eide Bia? Because of the Kederach HaMnoafim. The Kederach HaMnoafim is the only answer to the following Shnei Ksuba Machishim. One Kosov says you need Eidus, who saw the exact Maisa and the Machayah, the violation of the other. The other Pasuk in the Torah says we can put these criminals to death for adultery. How do we reconcile those two? And that itself produces the Kosov HaShlishi, which is called Kederach HaMnoafim. Fascinating new definition of Eidus. All right, Rabosai. We start the second pair. Elu Heim Golu. You know, we had the first Mishnah in Masechta the Makkos about Eidei Golus. And now we're going to talk about Golus. Golus means a Rotzeach B'Shogeg. What exactly is the case and what are the rules that govern a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, who has to exile himself to the Ir Miklat. And this Mishnah is going to establish the following rule. I don't know if you're all familiar with it. It's called Derech Yerida. That somehow the motion of the murder is a downward motion. And that is the key to Rotzeach B'Shogeg Chayev Golos. Okay? So when the Rotzeach was involved in bringing something in a downward motion, then if he kills someone inadvertently, he's Chayev Golos. Okay? So here's the mission. Eluena Golina Horeg Nefesh Bishgaga. When does a person go to Golos for murdering someone inadvertently? Hoya Ma'agel B'Ma'agela. Rashi has a whole long presentation here about what exactly does ma'agel b'ma'agela mean. And basically Rashi says he is trying to make sure that his roof is slanted. And the reason for that is because he wants there to be some drainage when water hits the roof. So what does he do? He works with a tool called a ma'agela. Ma'agela, Rashi says, is chatichas eitz ova. It's a very thick piece of wood. And he attaches a base yad, some sort of a holder, right, to this eitz. And what he's able to do is, Rashi says, Tochin Hayu Gagosem Bitid, when they would cement the roof, and the roof was basically flat, but when they added the cement, they would make sure that the cement would be on an angle. That's called Vishipua. And the reason for that is Kadeshi Azuvu Amayim. Is Rashi says that there are two different motions that are produced in this effort to make sure that the cement is slanted. One is called Dochafa Litzad Hashipua. He pushes it downwards. And the other action is Chozer Moshchailov, then he pulls it back up to him. And he starts again. Rashi identifies Ma'agel b'Ma'agela as the downward motion. And if in the downward motion, as he's pushing this chatichas eitz of a downward, then it falls. It falls. The Mishnah uses the term v'nafla olav. You know, somehow he drops, he loosens his grasp, his hold on the base yad, and as a result, this very thick and probably heavy piece of wood falls on someone and kills him, vaharagot. So that's case number one. Now he has case number two, in which he's also chayav golos. Hoye mishalshel b'chavis. Right, again, once again, he's working on his rooftop, but in this case, he has a barrel, and he rolls down the barrel with a rope until it reaches the karka. But unfortunately, nafla olav. Somehow, as he's rolling this rope downward, he drops, he loosens his grasp, his hold on the rope, and the chavis, therefore, because of its sheer weight, falls and kills someone. Faragotu. Or in the third case, hayyored basulam, he's walking downwards on a ladder, and his feet somehow lose their grip on the rungs of the ladder. V'nafal olav, and he falls on his friend. V'harogo, and he kills him. In all the above cases, hareza gola, he goes to the Ir Miklat. Why? Because he killed the Derech Yeridu. Aval, says the Mishnah. Im haya moshech b'magela. If he was pulling the Magela in an upward motion, and then nafla olav, he lets go of this Magela, and it falls on his friend Varagoto. That's case number one, where he's not chayiv golos. Case number two, haya dole b'chavis. He is pulling up the barrel from the bottom, correct? The nifsak hachevel, right? The string breaks, the rope breaks. Interesting. In the first case, what happened was he loosened his grip on the chavis, and the chavis fell by its sheer gravity and killed somebody. In this case, the rope itself was cut in the middle. The nafla olav haragato, in these cases. And here's the third case, Haya Ola Besulam. He was climbing up the ladder and he loosened, his foot didn't catch the rung and he fell. V'nafalov, he fell on his friend Varago. He killed him by the sheer weight of his body falling on his friend. Hareze Eno Gola Zeh Klal. The Mishnah sums it all up. Kol Shebederech Yiridoso Gola Shalom Bederech Yiridoso Eno Gola. Now, why did the Mishnah need three different cases? And what is the sequence of the Mishnah? If you take a look at Tosfos, Dibra Maskil Haya Yore Besulon, which is the bottom Tosfos on your page, he says, Yesh Omrim Detana, the way it's written is Lo Zu Af Zu Ketana, meaning from the lesser Chiddush to the bigger Chiddush. Lo zu ma'agel devadai yesh l'chai v'golus de lomalo nizhar. A person is working on the roof with this ma'agela, has to be very, very careful. And if he was negligent, he has to go to golus. That's the simple case. Then we get to the more complicated case. Elaaf mishalshel chavis, he's lowering the barrel. The shatir mizhar, he has his own vested interests in being very careful. And that is shalo yishover chavito. He obviously, you know, maybe he doesn't entertain the possibility that it's going to fall on someone's head and kill him, but he definitely wants to make sure that he doesn't lose the barrel. And then all of a sudden, boom, he loosens his grip and the barrel fell. So there also, there's an obvious negligence factor. Not quite as obvious as the case of the Magela, which requires constant care, because it's going up, it's going down. The ode, and furthermore, we get to the third case, lo zu ela af zu yore besulon, ditfei mizar. Certainly he was careful. There's no doubt he was careful. Kadesh lo yipol im kadesh lo yipol. Naturally, he's going up a ladder, a very steep ladder, and it's very high. He has to be careful, unless he's, he's a masochist, right?
He's going down the ladder.
Oh, we didn't get to the... I'm sorry. Did I say he's going up?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Good.
Yeah, because I'm already... I'm a step ahead of you. Thank you, Sam, for pointing that. I'm sorry. He's going down the ladder, and he certainly has to be afraid that he might fall. Nevertheless, even in this case, where obviously we're assuming there was some level of care, but he wasn't careful enough. And now I'd like to learn with you the Mi'yud. Did you get the Mi'yud?
Yes.
Okay. So... these are the pages for the Meiri. I don't know if you got them. There are a couple of different points here in the Meiri that I wanted to call to your attention. And I don't know if we'll have time now to go through all of it from beginning to end. But let me make the following points, the following observations. The first Me'iri, which is on the top of your page, which starts with the word Le'inyan, is focused on a number of different issues. But one issue which I wanted to call to your attention in particular is the following. And we hinted at it before. Why is it that in the two cases of the chevel, of the chavis, excuse me, hayim eshalshel the chavis, there's a discrepancy here between the resha and the seif? And that goes beyond just derech, you read the derech nefil. In the resha, it says, v'nafla olav, what fell and killed the person? The chavis itself, correct? Nafla olav. She fell, meaning the chavis fell. Chavis is feminine, right? In the seifa, on the other hand, it says nifsak hachevel, the nafla olav. Right? It was the chevel itself that was cut, and therefore the chavis fell. There's no indication in the resha that there was a nifsak hachevel. So the Meiri presents the following thesis. He says the following. Why did the Mishnah in the Reisha give us the case of Nishmat HaChevel? I'm sorry. Let me get that straight. They should be open to Nishmat HaChevel, right? Nishmat HaChevel. In other words, he let go of the rope and then the chavis fell. Whereas in the Sefer, the Chevel, the rope split. He says the following. If the Mishnah in the Reisha would have presented the case of Nifsak HaChevel, then one could have argued that Rak only in this case is Gola Balachavis, but if he loosens his grip on the Chevel, he doesn't go into Golos. And here the Meiri introduces a very fascinating concept called Karov Lemezit. The Meiri postulates that Shogeg for a Chiyuv Golos has to be exactly on the dot. It's got to be Shogeg. It can't be Ones, which means circumstances beyond his control, and it can't be Mezit. Not only that, he says, it's got to be exactly shogeg, and it's not even karov lemeis. Meaning, if the negligence factor goes too high, then he doesn't go into golus. We'll see what happens to him. But golus is exclusively the domain of someone who is shogeg but not karov lemeis, shogeg but not karov lemeis. Says the Meiri, perhaps if he lets go of the rope, we should define him as karov lemeis. Karov lemeis basically means, and we're going to have to get into this, but it means he has to protect himself against the Gola Dam for the rest of his life. There's nowhere on the face of the earth that will give him protection from the Gola Dam. And if the Gola Dam finds him, I don't care where, and kills him, the Gola Dam is okay. I'm not saying we should encourage the Gola Dam to kill him, but because he's not amazing, mamish, but he's karov lemeis. His negligence level is so high. The Chiddush of the Mishnah, the Reisha, says to me, is that despite the fact that he let go of the Chevel, and we would have thought, in our own way of logically analyzing, that that's called karov lemeis? No, that still is considered shogeg. Okay? And you might add that Tosfos is pointed because he is careful, he doesn't want to lose his chavos. That's as far as the Reish is concerned. Then he goes on. He says, and as far as the Seifa, the Seifa says Nifsak, that the Chevel itself splits. If the Mishnah in the Seifa would have mentioned Nishmat, where he let go of the rope, one could have argued that only in the case of Nishmat is there a difference between Derech Yerida and Derech Aliyah, but in the case of Nifsak, Eino Gola Li'olam, because it's Karov La'onis. So the Havamin in the Sefer, which is the exact reverse of the Havamin in the Reisha, is that if the Chevel splits, if the rope, what word am I looking for?
Breaks.
Breaks, yeah, I'm looking for a different word, but if the rope breaks, then I would say he's snaps, okay, that's, we're getting closer. Not there yet, but if the rope snaps, then what?
Tears.
Okay. Like, we're all good. We're good. Yeah. Then in that case, he's karov lemeis and he doesn't go into shogeg. So again, the chiddush of the Reisha is that despite the fact that he lets go of the rope, nevertheless, he's still considered shogeg and he's not karov lemeis. And the chiddush of the Seifa is that even though the rope snaps, he's still considered a shogeg and he's not karov lemeis. That's the Meiri sheet.
When it's going down, if the rope snaps.
Correct. It always has to be there. If you read there, if you, but again, do you see where the two scenarios each have a chiddush, one in the Reish and one in the Seif? That's the Meiri. There are other points in the Meiri that maybe we'll get up to, but first I want to call your attention to the Rashash. If any of you have the Rashash, you'll find it all the way in the back of your Gemara. I'm just going to read it to you. The Rashash says the following. The Reisha is the Adam HaMishal Shel Chavis Mirosh Hagak. The man is lowering a barrel from the roof. And therefore, Nokta, the Mishnah mentioned, takes the case of Nishmat HaChevel Miyado, Lefi Shederech HaMoridim B'masa Koi B'chevel Shemashachrim HaChevel Miyadom Liat La'at. The way that you lower this barrel, if you're on a high place, is by constantly loosening your grip on the chevel. And therefore, if you loosen it too quickly or too abruptly, then it's very, very shayach. It's very possible and plausible that you'll just loosen your grip in such a way that because of the weight of the chevel, of the chavis, it's going to fall. It's going to fall from your hand. So therefore, the Mishnah wants to talk in the Reisha about a common case. In Mishal Shel Sachavis, the common case in Derech Yerida is where as he's lowering and loosening his grip, he may actually lose control of the Chevel, and that's the case of the Reish. However, in the Sefer, he says, we're talking about an Adam Amale Chavis L'Rosh Hagag. He's lifting up this Chavis. And Derech Hama'alim Lachos Heitiv Kolzman Bechevel V'lo Laharpos Vimenu. It's very unusual or very infrequent that a person, when he's raising this Chevel, raising the Chavis with the Chevel, would loosen his grip on the Chevel. And therefore the Mishnah doesn't want to talk about such a case that's so unusual. But what could be very common, because he's pulling it up and gravity is pulling it down, is that the rope might snap. So let's just review what we're saying. We're saying according to the Meiri, there's a halachic chiddush in each case, the Reish and the Sefer of Meshalshel Es HaChavis. The Reish is telling me that even though he's being Meshalshel Es HaChavis, and you might think therefore he was exceedingly careless, and if he's Karav Le Mezid, Kamashma is Karav, no, he's a Shogeg. And in the Sefer, in the case where it snaps, you might have thought that maybe that's Karav Le Onis. The Rashash, on the other hand, explains that the difference between the Reish and the Sefer is simply what's Matzah, what's Shachiyah, what's common, and what's not. The Rambam, in Hilchos Rotzeach, and with this we'll wrap it up, offers an explanation, a rationale, as to why the Torah should differentiate between Derech Yerida and Derech Ali. And I think the words of the Rambam will resonate for us, because it's very similar to these concepts that we saw in the Meiri. First, the Rambam establishes, it's the next to last source on page 1, Misha Yadola Sachovis La Loso Legag V'nifsak HaChevo V'nafal Chaver HaGoso. So we're talking about Derech Aliyah, Oshaya Ole Besula, etc. For Hagopotim and Agos. And the Rambam adds the following words. Please note them. Shezekimo Onusu. That Derech Aliyah is similar to an Onus. This very low element of negligence. Very small, very minimal. She'ein ze darvar hakarov lios berov ha'itim elikmo pelehu. In other words, how frequent would it be that someone is climbing up a ladder, he falls backwards? The Rambam says that that's not something that he would have considered happening. You know, it's not on your mind. You know, you're constantly bending yourself and moving upwards. Or in the case of a chevel, that all of a sudden the chevel should snap. Now the Rambam goes to Derech Yerida, and the Rambam says the following: Aval im haya mishalshel sakhavis, if he's lowering the barrel, v'nafla al chaveru v'argosu, haya yoreg besulam, he's climbing down the ladder, v'nafla al chaveru v'argo, haya magal ma'agel b'magelu, v'nafla al chaveru v'argosu, golu. And here the Rambam adds the following: Shaharei derech nefila matzui berov ha'itim lahazik. He says that here he should have definitely taken this into consideration. He should have anticipated this possibility. It's quite frequent that on the way down something could happen and it could cause damage. V'davar karvu lios. It's scientifically almost predictable that something that could happen. Sharei teva hakoved lered lamata b'meira. Something that is heavy goes down very quickly. Gravity pulls it down. And therefore, if he should have anticipated it and he didn't take the proper precautions, hoya velo zire zatzmo, velo tike maisav yofa b'shas yirida yigla.
That's considered negligence.
So again, the Rambam is very clearly defining something which on the one is karov leones, and on the other hand, something which is karov, which is actually shogeg mamish. He says that you can identify derech aliyah, when something falls backwards, as karov leones. This is not something that we would really have considered. It's not statistically probable at all. On the other hand, if it's derech yirida, then we can take the person to task, because this is something commonplace and he should have been very, very careful to avoid that accident that brought about the death of someone else. That is the Rambam. The question that I want to leave with you is the following question. In the middle of this whole presentation, the Rambam quotes a pasuk, and I skipped it deliberately. The Rambam says, Shenemar vayapel alav vayamot. And if you take a look in our Gemara here on Dav Zayin Amud Beis, the Gemara says Minani Mili Omer Shmuel Ti Omer Kro, because the pasuk says vayapel alav vayamot. If you have the Oz Vahadar, it's on the side. He says Obechol even asher yomit bavelo ra'ot vayapel alav vayamot. So quite clearly the Torah is saying it's derech nefilo. Ad she yipol, says Shmuel, derech nefilo. And the Rambam quotes this pasuk. Now, usually when the Rambam quotes a pasuk, that's what we call gzeiras hakasul. The Rambam doesn't have to give any rationale to explain the pasuk. The Torah says that under these circumstances, this is when you consider the shogeg as far as golus le'arav niklod, and this is when you're not. And the precondition is vayapel lav yamot ad sheyipol b'derech nefilo. Why does the Rambam feel compelled to offer some sort of explanation? And the answer has to be that the Rambam feels that this pasuk is not necessarily to be read in that way. In other words, we're not compelled to read the way Shmuel read this pasuk of derech ad sheyipol derech nefilo. What I mean to say, Aaron, is the following: that the Rambam says that because of the svara, that's what gave Shmuel the gumption, you know, the ability to say that this drasha is the basis for this halacha. If not for the logic of it, then we could have interpreted the pasuk differently. Yes. How so?
Part of the Mishura.
Oh. So the Pnei Yoshua says the following. He says, Im lo sheyesh svara b'davar, if not for the svara that the Rambam offers, which gives us a logical difference between Derech Ali and Derech Yerida, he says, we could have said the following: Ein kavonas hakosav l'chayev golus rak b'derech yirida. The Torah is not coming to tell him in the pasuk vayapel lav yamot that the only way we can put him to death is if it's derech yirida. Ela adarav hakavona b'zeh hishafilu derech yirida chayev golus. Maybe the Torah is telling us that even if it was derech yirida, he's chayev golus. The Ein Omrim, and the Torah is coming to Lafuke, Shekarov Lemezid Havi. That the Pshia, in the case of Derech Yerida, because again of the commonality and the frequency of such an accident, is such that the person should have taken into consideration being super careful about that possibility. But if a Kolsh came to Derech Aliyah, in other words, Shmuel could not possibly convince us that this pasuk is coming lafuki to exclude derech aliyah. Maybe derech aliyah is your pure shogeg, because derech aliyah, you know, really you can't hold him to task for such super duper negligence because it wasn't something anticipated. But we would have said, if not for the pasuk vayapel lav vayamot, that derech yirida, where there's a frequency and therefore an anticipation, there's a karov lemezid, and therefore he should be part of a gulf. The Torah is only telling me that lo mi boy, not only are you considered a shogeg in the case of derech aliyah, you're also considered shogeg in the case of derech yirida. Ah, now the Rambam is absolutely on the mark. The Rambam now analyzes the cases in a logical way that justifies the way Shmuel darshens this pasuk as a miut to exclude derech aliyah. Says the Rambam, once you understand and appreciate that derech aliyah is karav la'ones, that this is something that's a dover pella v'yeno motzi klal, and therefore the level of negligence is so low that he's karav la'ones, then you could understand that what the Torah wants to tell you is that derech yirida, and only derech yirida, constitutes shogeg. And why does derech yirida qualify as shogeg? Because it's not a dover pella, on the contrary, it's a matzui, and therefore the negligence is a serious level of negligence, and you're chayiv golos in that case. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. There's still more in this Me'iri and in the Ramban on the bottom, so you can hold on to this for next week. I have to apologize that I have to run, so I won't be able to stay.
You have a minute?